Medical Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee. Celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, the equally very cute Dr. Eamon Shannon is here. Yep. Here in studio.
Indeed.
And listen, you want to get your tuppence worth in about
absolutely.
James Last.
If a nurse was listening to James Last's music wafting in through the window of the then new Tralee General Hospital, it had to have been 1984 because that's the year the hospital opened.
Okay, so we've another vote for 1984.
So I think it's 83 and 84.
We're going to have to get to the bottom of this.
One word
or other. And yet, Terry O'Brien says that Michelle O'Sullivan, who played with James Last, thinks it was 86. Anyway, we're going to have to find to the plot thickens, as they say.
Absolutely.
So it seems we can pretty much be sure that James Last played in Tralee twice, but what years were there is the big question. Anyway, Eamon, moving on from music and to more mundane matters. I asked you today to talk a little bit about stomach problems.
Yeah.
The reason being that I think, and we've said this before on the show, an awful lot of people seem to get reflux and acid and all that. I just know from the questions that come in week after week. What's going on there? Is it what we're eating or what's going on?
Yeah, a lot of it is unfortunately down to Western diet. Now, I've said this over and over again, we have the best of food in the world, we really do. Our problem is our portion size has gone mad. I've said this many times. If you talk to your older relatives, and particularly the women who would have got the dinner sets as wedding presents, God help us, the dinner plates that people would have got 30 and 40, 50 years ago would be considered a small side plate today. Seriously, portion sizes have gone mad. Now, the problem is that that leads to an increase in weight, and we have a huge problem with excess weight in the community. The difficulty with that, it's a purely mechanical problem. If you're carrying a lot of extra weight and if it's bruising on the stomach, it will literally push the acid contents of the stomach out of the stomach and up into your esophagus.
Especially when you're lying down at
absolutely.
Night.
Absolutely. Of course, it's a purely mechanical thing. So the issue there is that just a bit of the anatomy, the esophagus or the gullet, as we call it, runs from the back of the mouth and goes slightly off to the left-hand side and enters the side of the stomach, which is a kind of football-shaped organ, slightly between rugby and a Gaelic football's shape. Anyway, it enters at a slight angle, and normally that slight angle creates a kind of a valve at the lower end of the stomach, at the lower end of the esophagus, which is the lower end of the gullet, and that usually prevents the acid from the stomach from getting back up along the esophagus. The problem is that the tissues that line the esophagus are a different kind of a tissue to the tissues that line the stomach. The ones lining the stomach are mucus secreting for the most part, apart from the cells that produce the actual hydrochloric acid. And the thing is that mucus it is that protects our stomach. Up in the esophagus, they are what are called squamous cells. They're flatter. They're to allow the food to get past. And there isn't the same degree of protection from the acid that there is in the stomach. So it's, as I said, in many cases, it's a mechanical problem. Now, there is a diagnosis. People talk. Keep saying, "Oh, I've got a hiatus hernia," and the thing is that all that a hiatus hernia means is that the stomach is pushing up through the diaphragm around the esophagus into the chest. And the reason I'm saying it's a diagnosis, not a diagnosis, is because if you x-ray enough people, you'll find that most people have a degree, and anybody who unfortunately is carrying a bit of extra weight will almost certainly have a degree of hiatus hernia. But some people seem to be more afflicted by the reflux than others, and as you said quite rightly, it's more pronounced when you're lying down, because literally what happens there then is the acid flows sideways up your gullet.
Can I just rewind you for a second, Eamon, because I'm interested in this whole idea about the plate.
Yeah.
Now, I know we are obviously eating a lot more than our grandparents ate.
Yeah.
But so dinner plates were smaller, and therefore
portion sizes were smaller.
Yeah, so it less food covered
absolutely
your dinner plate. Back
absolutely,
in the day.
That's my point. The reality is that again, I've got to be careful about the language I use. The whole supersize thing, and that, you know, when people are going for portions, and there is a certain mentality as well too, whether you're eating in or eating out, you don't feel you're not so much sated, but you don't feel you've got your value. Unless you get a big plate of food. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
And if people get a plate with, you know, a reasonable amount of food. Years ago, I remember Sarah Dowling, who was one of the really good dietitians we have in the county. Sarah was describing that really the portion of red meat we should be having at a time is about matchbox size. Now, matchbox size is about 4 ounces. The reality is that if people aren't getting 8, 12 and 16 ounce steaks, they feel they're being gypped.
Hard done by.
So that's what I'm saying, that it is about portion size. And I suppose the thing is that if you bring it on to the use of the so-called GLP-1 drugs, the semaglutide and the liraglutide and those kind of things, the various so-called skinny jabs, all they do is they just reduce your appetite, simply. Now, there's a bigger problem there because, unfortunately, a lot of people are ending up being malnourished on these injections, and that's a whole different topic.
Yeah.
But the reality is you don't feel like eating. And surprise, surprise, if you don't eat, and if you eat less, you lose weight. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the thing is that now these injections lead to all sorts of gut side effects as well too. And that's again another topic. But the point I'm driving at is that we are carrying more weight as a nation, as a race, especially in Western society. And again, it's not so much that we've got access to bad food. It's actually good food, but it's too much of it.
Now, I don't want to insult men out there, but it does strike me that an awful lot more men seem to have acid reflux and those kinds of problems.
It also boils down to, now again, you've got to be careful because you cannot generalise in this situation, but the reality that alcohol does a lot to relax muscles and things, and if somebody's had a couple of pints, they are certainly going to get a lot more acid. The difficulty is that the alcohol, amongst other things, the ethanol alcohol in the drinks we take actually dissolves that mucus lining to our stomach. So if you have a couple of pints, you have actually dissolved the lining, the stuff that's protecting us from the acid, so therefore you will feel more like it. Now, I know, of course, straight away I'll be saying there are many, many men who don't drink at all and do still get reflux and still get acid. But I am saying that alcohol is a contributory factor in this case.
Yeah, so I'm guessing that you, from time to time, Eamon, as a family doctor, have to have an uncomfortable conversation with people about, look, the bottom line here is you need to lose weight.
Yeah, and well, again, it's probably more a question of the change the lifestyle conversation. As part of a healthy lifestyle, yes, to reduce your calorie intake, yes, be careful, but all things in moderation, alcohol in moderation included. And the thing is that you could actually resolve a lot of these problems without having to resort to medication. Part of the problem, I think, is that the medication is so effective. The so-called proton pump inhibitors, so the omeprazole, esomeprazole, these kinds of medication, they're really very effective. They really are very good. And to a certain extent, people are saying, okay, I'll have my big dinner and then I'll throw down one of these tablets afterwards. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so but that can't be a long-term solution.
No, it's not. Absolutely not.
Well, listen, instead of going into every stomach condition going, I think maybe we will take take the questions and each stomach condition will come up as the questions come in. We'll start with this one. This listener had their gallbladder taken out over a year ago because they had gallstones. I'm not sure if it's a man or a woman, but the person says, however, I suffer from awful heartburn most of the time and find myself taking a lot of Gaviscon. Do I need to be on medication or how can I resolve the issue? I do have a good diet in general, but this is worse than it ever was before my gallbladder was taken
out. Part of the problem is that the gallbladder acts as a storage organ. So normally what happens is that we produce bile, which is the other thing we need. Bile is used to digest fats. It's a kind of a detergent. And what it does, it breaks down fat in our diet. So if we get, our gut is exquisitely sensitive to all sorts of things. And almost as soon as we start eating something that the body detects as being fatty, what'll happen is that the gallbladder will start to contract and release the bile into the gut to start dissolving the fats. When somebody has had the gallbladder operation, the cholecystectomy operation, the gallbladder is gone. Now what's happening, instead of the bile being stored, it's just constantly trickling into the gut all the time. And for some people, you can get what's called a bile reflux. So that is to say that where the bile goes into the first part of the bowel beyond the stomach, called the duodenum, it can sometimes go backwards up into the stomach and cause a degree of irritation there. If this is an issue, I'd strongly recommend talking to your own GP, and you may need to talk to the surgeon who did the operation for you. And yes, you may need to have medication to relieve your symptoms for you.
So you don't actually need your gallbladder, do you?
Yes and no. I mean, as our listener has just told us, they're a bit plagued by worst gastritis since they had their gallbladder removed. For the majority of people who have had the gallbladders removed, myself included, it doesn't make a huge great difference. But the thing is that the gallbladder does act as a store for the bile to be released when it's needed.
Now, question from a female age 59. In the last 5 weeks, she finds that she gets an upset stomach if she eats carbohydrate. And she's wondering, why is this happening all of a sudden?
Yeah. Okay, the quick answer is I don't know. But what I mean to say by that is that there's many factors that could be at play here. It may very well be that there is some change in the gut otherwise, and that by taking the carbs, it is triggering whatever it is that's causing her symptoms. I suppose I'm always just a bit wary that as we get that bit older, if we have any sort of persistent gut symptom, that it should be checked out. Now, you'll hear people be talking about things called gastroscopies and colonoscopies, procedures which are reasonably straightforward, where a camera is either put into the stomach or up from the bottom into the bowel. But in this case, if it's a persistent symptom, your GP will organise for you to have a gastroscopy, and then you'll see what is exactly going on. You could try an alteration, just try reducing the carbs in your diet and see how you get on and see if that helps relieve the symptoms for you. And that's grand. And I think it's important also to state that while it's really important that people be moderate in their calorie intake, they really, really, really need to have a balanced diet. And this is what the injections are showing us. People are reducing the calories, but they're actually end up being severely malnourished, and they're actually not getting a balanced diet at all. So if you're going to take carbs out of your diet, do try and be careful to try and make sure that you keep a balanced diet otherwise.
Very good. Eamon, it's 16 minutes past two. We're going to take a break. We've lots of questions coming in for you about stomach issues, and we will prioritise those questions. By the way, Eamon will revert to general queries next week, but for this week we're going to stay focused on stomach issues. So if you have a problem, a medical problem in that area, phone the question through to Brenda on 066 712 3666, and if you're texting it in, remember to let us know whether you're male or female and a rough idea of how old you are as well.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, Eamon, more questions coming in for you. We have a 70-year-old female who had a flare-up on a hiatus hernia. She still gets a small bit of belching and wind, and she's wondering how long will it last?
Oh, unfortunately, this is how long is a piece of string in. Sure. The difficulty is that the underlying anatomy hasn't changed and the tendency is there all the time. In a lot of these cases, yes, we do encourage people to change lifestyle to see what they can do to try and help relieve the symptoms themselves. But there are a number of medications. You can use medication, so-called prokinetic agents that help promote kinesis, they'll promote the movement of food through the gut. Metoclopramide and domperidone be examples of that. And then, of course, you've got all the acid suppressing medications, which are really super effective. So, omeprazole, esomeprazole, rabeprazole, and so on and so forth. One thing I need to say to people, and just as an important safety message, the safety message is that if you have persistent gut symptoms and you're finding that you're losing weight unexpectedly, please don't hesitate. Please do make an appointment to see your own GP.
Yeah, and since you mentioned it, stomach cancer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What are the rates?
The good news is, and this is one of the unusual ones, while bowel cancer, the other, and colon cancer is one of the most common cancers we see, stomach cancer for some reason seemed to have fallen over the decades. And while we occasionally see a stomach cancer, it's much less common. Curiously, anthropologically, the Far East, African countries, things like that, are still seeing high rates of stomach cancer, which we're not seeing in Western society. So I'm not sure what the reason for that is. But the one bit of good news is that stomach cancer rate are much less than they used to be.
Okay, let's move on to a question from a person who says, can you take reflux tablets for life?
That's a kind of a trick question. The answer is that there are some people who have to take acid suppressing tablets for life. So the ones I'm thinking of particularly, there are those people who have a condition called a Barrett's esophagus, which is a condition where there are pre-malignant changes, precancerous changes that happen to the lower end of the gullet, and they really do need to suppress their acid production. There are some concerns about the long-term use of the medications. we need a certain amount of acidity in our stomach. For example, vitamin B12 requires an acid environment to be properly metabolized and digested. So the answer is that yes, we probably are going to say to people, you could probably take them. Mind you, one practical piece of advice is use the lowest dose you can get away with. So there are, for most of these medications, there's a healing dose and a maintenance dose. The maintenance dose is typically about half the dose of the healing dose. And you would go on the maintenance dose rather than the healing dose. And that's probably a safer course of action.
Now, I'd imagine the answer to this next one is similar. It's a female who's wondering, is it okay to take acidophilus? And can you stay on it all the time?
Yeah, well, see, acidophilus then falls into a different category in the sense that the acidophilus, despite the name, is actually one of these activated yogurt kind of drinks. Now, what I mean by that, there's a whole raft of these preparations available. And where people have suffered a stomach upset, it can be useful to use these kind of preparations. Now, essentially, they're foods. They're not drugs. And therefore, by definition, unless you make a best of yourself completely, the answer is that yes, you can absolutely definitely take this indefinitely because it's not a drug.
A listener says, since you're talking about gastritis and duodenal inflation, this person says, I had Barrett's, but that is gone. But now I'm diagnosed with this gastritis and duodenal inflation.
Yeah.
Inflammation.
That thing, yeah. Okay. The answer is that there is an ongoing inflammatory process. So again, the anatomy, the esophagus or the gullet goes into the stomach, goes into the duodenum and then goes off into the ileum, into the small bowel and so on and so forth. And we are treating these as if they were separate organs. And to a certain extent, there is differences between them, but essentially they're one long tube. Our gut composes a 40-foot tube extending from mouth to anus, and different parts of the gut are adapted to specific purposes, but it's still underneath of all the one organ. The thing that strikes me in this situation is that the inflammation that was there or might still be there in the lower end of the esophagus now seems to be affecting the stomach and the duodenum. Interesting one and slightly unusual one, and I'm hoping that you are in contact with the relevant specialist and discussing this with them.
A female who is 66 has a hiatus hernia and narrowing of the esophagus. Yeah. She says, I suffer very bad bouts of acid reflux. I'm on 40 milligrams of Nexium twice a day, but when it flares up, nothing can calm it. 3 days over Christmas, I couldn't eat.
Yeah.
I eat normally, very healthy food, a little and often. My blood count is also low.
Yeah. You see, what the problem there is that we're now into a vicious cycle there, because she mentioned in passing that she's gotten a narrowing of the gullet, a narrowing of the esophagus. So almost certainly she's developed a stricture, which is a scarring of the esophagus. Now, the problem with that is that if the stricture gets stretched for some reason, the tissues lining the gut crack and they can become inflamed. And so this is self-perpetuating. The only thing I can add to that is that in addition to the large dose of the proton pump inhibitor, so in that case you're using a medication called esomeprazole, and 80 milligrams would probably be as much as you can take, loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of antacids. So Gaviscon is probably the one that most people use. It's literally drinking by the gallon. Years and years and years ago, there was a nun visiting from the Isle of Wight. She was originally from the Farn Fore side. Anyway, the thing is, I'm talking about decades ago. She was putting away 180 millilitres of Gaviscon a day. Think about
Stop.
It.
Stop.
Yeah.
nun.
A nun, yes. And she was a good age too. 60 mils three times a day. That's, do the math in my head, that's what, 60, no, that's I can't do the math. It's 12 teaspoonfuls three times a day.
Good Lord.
Can't do yourself any harm with it, is what I'm saying.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. A listener says, Eamon, is it wrong to be on 10 milligrams of
omeprazole, yeah.
Yeah, daily. It's a man in his early 70s and he's wondering, is it wrong to be on that dose or should I give it up for a while?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. I have to ask the question, why were you prescribed in the first place? The 10 milligram is actually the lowest maintenance dose you can get. That particular medication comes in 10, 20 and 40 milligram strengths. So the 10 milligram is by far and away the lowest. There's no harm, actually, if you wanted to give it a try from time to time. Now, the only thing you need to be aware of is that if you're stopping these tablets, you can sometimes get reflux hyperacidity. In other words, you stop taking the tablets, you can get a kind of a surge of acid being produced in the stomach. And what the specialists recommend is that that's where you'd use your Gaviscon again. That if you did want to give take a break from these tablets or stop tablets or something completely, if you stop them, you'll probably get a bit of reflux or a bit of acidity. But if you take the Gaviscon and the thing settles down, then you're off the tablet.
A caller asks, what can be done for a narrowing of the gut besides an operation?
Yeah, the quick answer is not a lot. It's a mechanical problem. Now, you're probably talking about a stricture of some sort. The difficulty is it implies there's scarring there, and there's nothing that I'm aware of that will dissolve or take away the scarring. In the case of a stricture in the esophagus and the gullet, what the surgeons will sometimes do is stretch the esophagus. They put in do the gastroscopy thing, but they then use something to stretch open the esophagus. If you've got a very badly scarred part of the gut, you may end up having to remove that completely to resolve the problem.
I'm just going to give you a couple that are non-stomach related, Eamon, right. If you don't mind, before we finish up. Listole listener said she's wondering if she should see her doctor. She fell last weekend and she badly bruised her left breast.
Oh, sore does. If it's persisting, yes. The likelihood is that, okay, a bruise in any part of the problem is any part of the body is a problem. If the breast gets bruised, it can be really uncomfortable. The thing is that because of the composition of the breast tissue, there's a lot of fatty cells there. The healing isn't great. It can take quite a while for it to settle down, and the bruise stings like the devil. The thing I'd be watching out for, if it gets red or hot or sore, in case, in other words, that you get an infection or a mastitis, then you absolutely definitely would need to see your GP to get the appropriate treatment for that.
Okay, but if she leaves a few days, it might heal all of itself.
Annika.
A listener says, would you ask Eamon, could you recommend a good supplement I could take specifically for hair, nails and skin? I'm 71-year-old female, I'm celiac and taking a blood thinner. The problem is I know a lot of supplements can interact with blood thinners, and she said she normally eats very well, but feels she needs a supplement.
Okay, so the answer to that is talk to your chemist, because they have much more information on this subject than myself. One of the things you can do is that the chemist can make sure they know the excipients, they know the things that all medications are made up of, and they'll be able to make sure that you get a gluten-free supplement. So that's the thing to go and talk to your chemist.
Yeah, I was going to just fit one more in. Just bear with me one second. Oh, yes, this person, I have to get this in because I totally identify with this person. This is a woman, 62. She's constantly cold, like myself. She says, it doesn't matter if the heat is on. My hands and my feet are like blocks of ice. My doctor sent me to Cork to make sure my circulation was okay. And it is. And don't say go walking, because my two ankles are very painful due to a fall. This has gone on for about 8 years now.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are some people where they've got really good circulation internally, but externally their circulation is hopeless. And what I mean by that is that they've got plenty of blood getting into the various parts of their body, hands, feet and every part in between. But the trouble is that relatively little blood is getting out to the skin. There is enough to keep the skin ticking over, to keep it alive, but it just, you're very cold. The problem is that the blood vessels to the skin are shut down, so you just don't get enough blood to the skin. Not a quick answer to that one, unfortunately. The rather facetious and slightly smart answer is keep warm. In other words, that all you could do is try and keep yourself as warm as possible, because I'm not aware of any medical way you can safely increase this issue to your skin. It's important that you did have the checkup to make sure that your circulation is okay, and you can take assurance from that, but that assurance isn't much consolation to you if you're freezing all the time.
And this is definitely the last one. A lady in her 70s, she says she's suddenly finding it very difficult to climb the stairs. She says, is it my hip or what could it be?
It's time to see your GP. If you're getting sudden onset of any new symptom, particularly that kind of problem, I mean, it may well be an arthritic problem. It may be a joint problem, but I would worry about other organs, like, for example, the heart or the lungs. And if there's something going on there, please, please, please go and make an appointment to see your own GP.
Perfect. Eamon, we leave it there. We've gone way over time, but we did get a lot of questions for you, and you're so good to answer so many of them, if not most of them. We'll see you next week.
Indeed, please God.